it's my honor to sort of look over this panel. I, as most of you know, if anybody knows me, I've been reading comics, especially DC Comics, since 1902, and have followed them all my life. And I was there in the early 1960s reading comics when that DC house style was very much defined by Kurt Swan, Carmen Infantino, and even before that, a gentleman named Dan Barry, and sort of the DC house style, very Norman Rockwell, very, very, very white bread American. And in the late 60s and early 70s, as you picked up the mystery books, in particular House of Mystery and House of Secrets, the Joe Orlando edited books, there was this invasion of, that we used to call it the Philippine invasion, of amazing artists coming from that we met the styles of life we've never seen before. We've never seen anything like Tommy Days and Media. We've never seen anything like Ernie Chan. We've certainly never seen anything like Alex Nigo in American Comics. And these guys just blew our minds. And so what we'd like to do at this panel is sort of talk a little bit about how that Philippine invasion got started and talk to these gentlemen about some of the difficulties they may have encountered doing American Comics and then where their career has gone from here. And then I will stop talking enough time to answer some questions and so forth. But I also believe, let me just introduce the panel going down. From the end, we have Mr. Tony DeZuniga. Next to him, we have old man Jerry Allen Greenland. Young looking for a man who was inking comics in the 1970s. I'm teasing. He's one of the newer lights of his generation, and I was lucky enough to work with him on Superman Birthright, along with Neil Liu. And one of the things I also appreciate about Jerry is that he has a huge understanding of the history of the art form in his country, and I'd like at some point to get you to talk a little bit about that. And maybe even you can do your YouTube thing. So, next to him, we have Mr. Alex Nino. And again, to my immediate left, you have Mr. Ernie Chan. Now, Ernie, did you have a presentation you wanted to?
Well, let them start first, and when it comes to me, I'll bring up some of my samples.
We would love that. All right. So let me go back now. Please, at any time, especially you, Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that that Tony was the first to be published over here, the first to be killed. Walk me through.
Actually, there was another artist who worked on American Comics for the first time. I think his name was... I forgot his name.
Then I call your bluff, sir.
No. Later I'll chime in. But I remember.
Emil Rodriguez.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He worked in the late 60s. He worked on some religious comics.
Okay. And then,
but then he disappeared.
Okay, and then specifically, but then specifically for DC, my understanding is that Carmine Infantino, who was the publisher of DC Comics at the time, got in touch with you and Nestor Redondo. Is that correct, sir?
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about how that came to be.
What happened was they were reprinting materials that I had already published before.
Right.
And then every time I ask Mr. Joe Orlando about that, you know, how come you're publishing materials that were already published? You know, why can't you publish new ones? And they said, we don't have any budget for that.
Yeah, they were this is the late 60s, and DC was doing a lot of reprints and stuff that quit. And they weren't paying reprint fees at the time, so it was just an easier and cheaper way of producing comics.
Right. You know. Well, finally, they told me, you only do have a very small budget for each, like maybe $12 for a page. Nobody would touch that, they told me. I said, yes, they would. If you give the work to the Filipinos, they would have glad. At that time, there were no publishing company that publishes comic books in the Philippines because of the they put a ban on newsprint, the paper that they use for printing a lot of stuff. And then what happened was, when they did that, wow, I mean, all the comic book business are all gone. It's not that they don't want to publish it. It's what happened was, they can't, there's no paper. They've been buying like black market paper. You won't do it because there are no markup for profits.
Yeah.
So anyway, to make the story short, when they looked, at first what I did was, I told the artist to send some samples to the office, to BC. They were very impressed, and Carmine decided that, no, yeah, we like the idea, but we would like to go down there and really meet all these people, you know, and what they can do.
Because up to that point, you'd not met face-to-face, right, or had you?
I'm sorry?
Had you met face-to-face at that point? Had you met Carmine in his office at that point, or was this all...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
All right.
I started working for them at that time.
But he had not yet been down, he had not been over the Philippines to see the other artists.
No, you're right. Until the day we went down there, and it was very nice, really. He met all these people. They're very nice people. You know how it is. We're all Filipinos here. I'm here. They're very, you know, people in the islands are all very friendly and all, you know. So, and then not only that, they look at all the drawings, they so beautiful pictures, okay? And then they said, the only problem I have to tell you is, you have to tell a very good, clear story, not just draw a pretty picture. That's the only problem, man. But then, you know, I keep telling the artist, in due time, it's no sweat off your back. You can do it. I know they can. That's the start of it, really.
Were you sort of overseeing the studio, or...?
No, it's not like that at all. It's what they said was, this is the time for you to train these guys, how to tell, you know. That's about it, really. It's not really an office of mine. It's like... That's why we call it National Studios, because after National Periodicals,
yeah.
The name, you know. So.
Well, let me back up in a minute, because I was under the impression that you were part of that you were part of the group that Carmine originally met down there. Now, how did you get to work for DC to begin with?
Well, they told me, well, you're from that place, so you know.
I mean, were you in New York at the time? Or
yeah, I was in New York. I was in New York. Okay. I went to school in New York. See, that's the reason I was in New York in the first place.
Right, okay.
I didn't go to DCNA.
Right.
You know, you gotta give me some work. No. Right. I went to school in New York City.
And so of the other artists that you were working with there in that second wave there, I guess Nestor Redondo was one, right?
Right, there you go. Joe Redondo was very nice to work with. He's good. He's an artist himself.
Yeah, Joe Orlando was an artist on the EC Comics of the 1950s,
right, yeah.
And he was hired. He was a really brilliant illustrator. He was hired. He also designed the Sea Monkey ads, by the way, as you're really back in the day. And Joe was well known in DC in the late 60s. He was hired to edit their mystery books, the horror books, and so forth. And he was known for having an eye for art, so he brought in a lot of, as a younger editor, brought in a lot of new and different styles, and he was very good to work with because he was one of the, most DC editors were, at that time, were writers, or they were just editors. They didn't, very few of them actually had any sort of artistic background. So Joe was a breath of fresh air, I'm sure, because he understood the language the visual language you spoke, right?
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
And then who else is in that sort of wave of artists?
Oh my God! Well, there's hundreds of them. I can't remember the names right now, but you know, but they are all very good artists. Yeah. They are all got the they're all talents.
Yeah.
See, what I did not talk to these people for them and promote them. No, they promoted themselves. All they did was, you know, showed their work, and that's it.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, and also DC was publishing, they were going through a giant, giant publishing boom at that time.
Yeah,
they were competing with Marvel and Newsstand, and they were cranking out a bunch of titles. And mystery books in particular, they were pretty hot back then. The superhero genre was taking a bit of a lull in the early 70s, and the big thing was the mystery books. And while, you know, and that's exactly the perfect slot. That and the romance books were a really good slot for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex, how did you come to work for DC and for the American companies?
Yeah. In fact, during those times, I was running short of receiving some local scripts from local publications. So what I did is send some samples to DC. And it so happened that Joe Orlando never answered me back or responded. Not until they came over to the Philippines. And that's when I, you know, asked him, why didn't you respond? And he says, well, I'm here already, so if you want, let's make a deal.
Right.
Yeah, so at the time, we were receiving 1 to 2 scripts, you know, per mail or something. He gave me something like a bunch of them just to make sure that I'll be busy for quite a while. And but the first thing that I asked Joe is, what will I do with this? You know, because it's really very hard to jump from local comics to American comic book, because doing a comic book, especially American comic book, is really not easy, because first you have to have your the reading and understanding of an American script should be adaptable to American readers. And what I did is, first it's pencil and paper, references, read the whole script dozens of times to understand the whole thing, and a dictionary. Because I just couldn't, you know, cope up with all those English, you know, colloquial things that it might confuse the readers. And then I had to go back to Joe again, and, well, I can do whatever you want me to do, but first, this is the first script I had to send you, and just to fill the water. Mm-hmm. And they like it. And my first story for DC at the time is To Die for Magda. And they loved it. And from then on, I felt easy that finally I got this freedom that I was really aching for. And that's the start of the whole thing, until, you know, I felt really comfortable and confident that I think anybody can do it.
Well, you just touched upon something very interesting. Did you feel that in working in American comics, it was more liberating, you know, in a sense, or artistically?
Reading?
Liberating, sort of like, you said sort of a freedom, you said you felt.
Yeah, because at that time, local comic books back in the Philippines, they usually prefer romance, comedy,
drama.
Action, drama, things like that. But unfortunately, my style is horror, you know, and science fiction. So whenever I do some romance thing, it looks like it's a Gabi ng Lagim, you know. It's horror, you know. So
maybe you mean horrible.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so it's, no, you know, I had really, it's all limited, you know, it's not enough, and of course I got a whole republic to feed, you know, I got a big family, and I need to, you know, go and look for some more resources. That's when I had to just, you know,
do
what
you
I can
what,
do.
Do you remember what your first page rate in DC was?
First it was, I think it's $6.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's compared to peso, I think that's almost double the Philippine, you know, Philippine rate already. So at that time I was really, you know, for the first time I had to receive that kind of, you know, really a high rate, you know. But it really doesn't, you know, at that time it really doesn't matter, just as long as I could get in, and just because that would be a big start. I really don't care, you know. So what I did is just go on and on and on, and until one time I got invited to this, to the, I think it was the Washington D.C. Science Fiction Convention, way back, that I had to talk to Saul Harrison. I think Tony knows Saul Harrison. He's the vice president of D.C. at the time. And I was asking for the real rate.
How'd that go?
And he says, I'm going to give you $25.
Wow.
You know. And I said, no, the whole of it. The real rate. I mean, the real rate. And they said, no, we'll just have to talk about that later. And I said, I'm sorry, Saul, man. I got some people waiting. If you don't provide that, then you lose me. And he never responded. So what I did is just, Roy Thomas is waiting upstairs at the hotel room. He says, I'll give you 85. Oh. Yeah. And that's Marvel Productions.
That's Marvel Comics money right there.
Yeah,
man.
And that's when I received a real good treating. In fact, that's the first time that they gave me Conan.
Yeah.
And then Man Gods and some of this really black and white, really serious that they offered at that time. And I was really very happy.
I got guys who aren't working at making $85 a page now, so.
Yeah, well, it really doesn't matter, just as long as, you know, I know what's really going on, and I could even go and work for free if you want to, you know, but the thing is that, of course, you've got to compensate me as you compensate the other people, just be fair.
Yeah, well, it's not like you weren't trying for a specific dollar figure. You just wanted what everybody else was getting.
Yeah,
a fair rate. Exactly.
Yeah, because at the time, of course, it's you know, it's me, and I can see some of those artists around. They're receiving much, and I'm not receiving that much. You know, so it's really not fair. So when I had these deals, everybody's pouring in. Peterson Publication, Gold Key, and some other, you know, resources. And the only thing that I haven't worked with is Epic.
Yeah.
You know, Epic.
Yeah.
You know, the black and white, almost Warren style thing. And then here comes DC again. You know, and they gave me a good rate, you know, at the time. And when I talked to Joe, and he says, oh, yeah, I understand. But at the time, Warren Publication is, you know, coming about new experiments in the comic book thing. That's when I, you know, I got a break of getting some more, you know, scripts from Warren, in which that gave me a bit more freedom, all freedom. That's all I got, you know. That what you see on those pages, those are just really. I thought I could, you know, end up things like doing some more experience, but I think it's endless, you know. You can do something new right now, but at the end, there's always a way to just do it some more.
Yeah.
So it really never ends.
Yeah. I'd like to turn the floor over to Mr. Ernie Chan for a second. Talk to me a little bit. What were your influences as an artist originally when you dream of working for American Comics? Did you dream of maybe living as an illustrator? I mean, what was it like for you growing up?
Okay.
Move the mic, actually. There you go.
First, in the Philippines, I started comics on the Filipino comics at the lowest rate they can give is 5 pesos a page. Then that's how you start at the base. And then I met Tony, and I told him I can apprentice for him, and he took me in, and I worked with Tony, and we have a nice relationship. And then he had to come here, and what year was that when you come here?
68?
Yeah,
you're right.
So I was forced to go on my own.
On your own, yeah.
And I was able to pick up a lot of skills from Tony.
Yeah.
I was able to promote myself in Filipino comics. I reached the top rate, which is 25 peso, I think.
Okay.
And then a year after Tony, my sister petitioned me, and I was able to come here.
Yeah, that would be so 1969.
Okay. And then I was in California where my sister is living. I didn't get into comics right away. I worked in advertising, small advertising for a year or so. And then I looked up Tony where he is, and he's in New York. I saw his brother in San Francisco airport. I got his address, and I got in touch with him, and I asked him if he wants me again to apprentice, and he said, yeah, come on over. So from California, my wife and I drove with my box wagons to New York. About took me 7 days. Nights, it's like in a hotel. And then Tony took me in, and I apprenticed for him just like in the Philippines.
It was a wise move on your part, because that led to you being, I don't have facts and figures in front of me, but my educated guess is that of the gentlemen up here on the panel, as far as DC Comics goes in particular, you were the most prolific, just because from about 74, 75, 76, you were the predominant cover artist.
When I apprenticed for Tony in New York, for 3 months I decided to go direct on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I applied at DC with my Filipino samples work.
Yeah.
I showed it to Carmine Infantino, and I worked on a Filipino comics called Batman.
Right.
But the spelling is B-A-T-H.
Yeah.
And he never took the back. That's why he's called Batman. And Carmen Infantino saw all the covers I did on that, and he gave me a break doing the real Batman.
You did a lot of Batman work. You were also, like I said, you did a lot of, just more so than a lot of your peers, you did a lot more of the superhero work. I think your style was, maybe more than some, a little more adaptable to the superhero genre, I think. So
yeah, I had practice in the Philippines.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, but actually, Tony taught me a lot when I'm assisting for him doing assistant.
Did you have something you wanted to show?
Well, these are my I did when I retired, that I keep myself busy doing some samples for online. To show what I've been keeping myself busy.
Sure. And in a second, I'm going to start taking some questions. So if anybody's got any, if you want to think about, give us a thought and help with some good ones. Like I said, this was. How many people were actually reading comics at the time that these guys were breaking? Again, you remember Wormley, which seemed really sort of this breath of fresh air and this excitement that was unlike anything else that was being published. Not just, and then, from there to go on to Marvel and do, and so much of the Robert E. Howard work. And while Ernie's looking, let me also just spend a moment with Jerry here, who is, we'll call you.
Yeah.
Poor Jerry.
You have 2-8, Jerry.
Wow. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, this is these are done in colored pencil on the pastel paper.
Nice. Colored pencils on pastel paper.
Yeah,
very
this
nice.
Is watercolor.
And can we dim the lights?
Can we dim the lights for a second? Would that be possible? Look at that. Oh,
there
nice.
You go. Wow.
And this is all fairly recent work?
Yeah, since I retired, I had nothing to do all around with it.
You don't look very retired for a retirement.
It was forced retirement.
All right.
They quit giving me assignments, so it's a retirement. But I had fun doing this.
Yeah. So once you broke in really and made your mark at DC, I mean, the other thing obviously you're known for is your Conan work with Roy Thomas.
Yeah, let me continue where I ended the working. Did Batman for 2 years,
right.
And then I shift to Marvel, bring my samples. They already seen my work.
Yeah.
I actually, besides Batman, I've been doing a lot of covers for DC.
Right.
Actually, those covers were Carmine Infantino's breakdowns.
Carmine did most of the sketches for all these covers as the former art director as well.
But, he kind of liked my way of finishing his rough.
Yeah.
Because I follow his instructions rough, and he got confident in me doing his final.
Whose work were you looking at growing up? Who were your influences artistically?
John Buscema.
John Buscema, I can see that all over you.
Because I've been inking it for 20 years or so.
But I mean, before that, Hal Foster. I see some Hal Foster in your work.
Alex Raymond.
I like his stuff.
And Hal Foster's Prince Valiant. I like that too.
Yeah. Really nice pieces. So looking at that, does anybody have any questions for these illustrious gentlemen up here in the beret? Yes.
Yes. Does a Filipino artist have to move to the U.S. now to carve out a really good career in the comic book industry, or can that person work back home?
Jerry, do you mind speaking to that? I mean, this is the question was, does a Filipino artist have to move to the States to carve out a career here these days?
Yes, for those people who might not know, I actually don't live in the U.S. I still live in the Philippines full-time. I'm just here for a convention. And I've been working for American Comic Book since 1995. And when I met a lot of the artists based here, especially Alfredo Alcala, he kept pestering me to move here. You gotta move here. And then one of the younger guys, Philip Pan, it's also saying the same thing. You gotta move here. You'll get more jobs that way.
He's gonna be doing okay.
I seem to be doing just fine back home. What made it easier was the internet, basically.
Yeah.
And back then, it was harder because you had FedEx stuff, and it probably made more sense for you to move. The deadline was like 4 days before the actual deadline, so to give the allowance for the FedEx to deliver the package. Now, because of the internet, you can really work up until the last minute almost, and that's what happens. But the internet has made it possible for me to live in the Philippines, and it's a bonus for me because what I make here is actually comparable to what other inkers of my profession is making. It's almost exactly the same. And back home, that's even a larger amount of money back home once you convert it to peso. So it really works a lot better for me.
But with the advent of the internet, with electronic mail, and also with webcomics being a global phenomenon, I know as a publisher and as an editor, myself, that a lot of those barriers are broken down. A lot of publishers, even the bigger ones, are not even remotely averse to finding new talent on the internet.
Actually, this is the first time I'm actually meeting my Mark Waid, who worked with for several years on Superman back in 2002. This is the first time I'm actually meeting him face to face.
Are you impressed?
You don't like their pictures.
Anybody else? Yes, sir.
First of all, I want to thank Comic-Con for really creating this long overdue panel. I mean,
it's a way for.
My colleague colleague, Roy David, I couldn't be here today, and he's been hard at work for the last 5 years to do a documentary called American Conqueros. I've been helping edit it, and seeing all your interviews, and Alex, I had the pleasure of being at your house, interviewing you over the Roy, and just seeing some of the interview footage. And I think the basic theme that I think was, as me being a hardcore comics fan, modern fan, and really growing up with like Los Portacios, more modern comic book artists, it kind of gave a more insight to really what I call you guys the pioneers of Philippine American comics. And I'm curious, because this being called the Philippine Invasion, I know there's a running theme about some of the prejudice you face, some of the backlash with all these Philippine artists coming, being imported to America. I don't know if each of you, especially with Jerry being a more of a modern artist, maybe it's more more accepting now. How was it when you first came in here? Did you face any kind of a prejudice and backlash from your American colleagues?
Wait, Tony, any thoughts on that? Any sort of backlash to the, was there any sort of second class citizen feel to
it? I didn't hear the question. You come by, come back and.
Oh, yeah. Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
What's the question?
when you first came out here to, in your first work here in America.
Oh, prejudice.
Yeah, prejudice. Yeah. Any backlash?
There's no prejudice. It's all in your work. If your work is good, they don't look at where we come from or what you are. If your work is good, you
I didn't feel that also. When I first started working here, I didn't feel none of that, really. Yeah, Eddie's right. They look at your work and it speaks for itself, really. Then they look at it and, hey, okay, that's it. They don't... Anybody here felt something strange is going on here?
Except the rate. A little bit below the standard rate.
But actually, to be more serious, I think that kind of helped their situation. First off, everybody in the industry at the time who had been getting regular paychecks for the last 20, 30 years knew that even before these guys came along, DC was lowballing artists and they were reprinting stuff without compensation, and so they kind of knew the business practices were a little sketchy then. So my memory and my talk with these gentlemen and stuff, I don't think there was a sense of, oh, these guys are here to take their jobs. And it was sort of like, wow, DC sucks because they pay $12 a page.
We don't mind the low rate as long as we are not, like, rejected or, not given any chance to show our talent.
Yeah. Any other, yes, in the back.
I just wanted to say, Nestor Redondo was actually my mentor when I
really?
When I moved down to Los Angeles and actually in my office. Then my brother Van, we were talking about the prejudice, joking on it. There hasn't been any real prejudice towards Filipino artists. My brother Van is an animator. He created the show Johnny Bravo.
Yeah.
So. Basically, it's actually our last name, so it's, Bravo. Well, it's our middle name, actually, since Filipino is our middle name. So, but it's been, with Filipino artists, we grew up with you guys. I mean, it was just, my dad just kept talking about Nestor, and then I eventually got to meet him and he mentored us, and then Francisco coaching. But the other question I had, do you guys remember anybody named Orby Jundis? Person that I knew, and Orby was the one.
Alex knew
him. A lot of the guys that know her. And Oscar Pinarada was talking about Alex too a number of years ago.
Go ahead.
I know Orby Jundis personally. In fact, he's my compadre. I'm his oldest son's godfather, Elric. Who's working for George Lucas right now?
Right.
Yeah, I know him. In fact, he's got lots of my collections. Yeah, so he doesn't, he doesn't say, but...
he owes you a lot, huh?
accounting. Yeah, so, he's one of those guys who, make all those plans of getting me into this country, like... getting invited to some conventions. In fact, he's the one who, got me invited to the science fiction convention in Washington, D.C. And also, I think he's also managed to pull strings back at, you know, at the El Cortez Hotel Science Fiction Convention 1976 too. Maybe, I don't know, maybe give me a chance to just show off and then maybe receive an Inkpot Award at that time. I don't know, but because he's always there and he's my, you know, my ayuda, almost a bodyguard each and every way. And he's a very nice guy. Yeah, but yeah, he's a good help.
Lady had a
question. Excuse me.
I'm sorry,
no,
please.
I'd like to say something about
Nestor.
Oh, please,
do, please do, because he's,
What's your name?
Rio.
Rio, you're very lucky to have met
Wait,
Nestor.
Rio Bravo is your name?
No, Rio
Cardinal.
Thank you. Bravo is my middle name. It's actually our middle name because Vance's full name is Ephraim Giovanni Bravo Partible.
Okay, enough with the name. let's talk Mr. Redondo. You're lucky to meet him and you were able to get something out of him.
Yes.
Nestor Redondo is one of our best in the Philippines. He is our forefather among the three of them, Akala, Kocing, and Nestor Redondo, the three forefather in our comic. Nestor is a good instructor. He has a lot of students that he taught came out with his Nestor Redondo style, and they can prove it. Like even Tony DeSuniga, when he started, his style is Nestor Redondo, right?
Nestor Redondo is a great guy. I mean, you know, he's not selfish at all. You know, if you ask him any question at all about Filipino art, or you know, he's very obliging, and he will really help you. And, you know, he's not very selfish to tell you what to do. It's a shame. Now, this is just my own opinion. When he got war here in this country, I think he was burnt out that time. He doesn't have the, you know, like when we were starting, I mean, you know, we were hungry. We said, hey, give me that work, we'll do it. He wasn't like that anymore. He was just mellowed down and, you know.
He's burned out. He's overworked.
But he's a great artist, I'm telling you.
A lot of Filipino artists model after his style.
Yeah.
Tony's the very first one. And then when Tony departed from Nestor, he has his own style. It's more Americanized, right?
Well, what I can say is every one of us here, if you're an artist,
as Nestor
really
influenced.
Styles are not taught. You develop that yourself, you know, later on. Hey, you know, I feel comfortable doing this style, and that becomes your trademark. So
even you,
really,
right?
Every one of us here, each of us has their own style, but it's not copied, it's not, except for one guy, you know.
I just want to make sure that people get a chance. You have you had a question actually.
Yeah. All right. So this is a pretty sensitive question, but I mean it's real and it's saddening. So I've seen this I don't know, like on ABC Ben or Jamie, one of those new shows about struggling artists. Now clinging or have been for years clung on to making rated comics. Comics. I mean, how true is that? It's true. Well, it's on the news, but yeah, how true is that and what can you say about it?
Jerry?
Oh, I actually know a couple of those artists who are actually basically born comics. And they're actually making lots of money. And they actually like doing it. I don't know the reason for your referring to, but I suppose that there would be people who are struggling and would draw something like that just to survive. I guess it would be true for any profession. But for those people that I know personally, they actually like doing it. But they don't, they're not really, they don't advertise it to us. This is, I'm just working. But if you press them, they will tell you that they're working on adult comics. And they seem to be actually pretty well off because of it.
Well, we need to wrap up because we've got, hold on for a second, we've got a young man named Patrick in the audience who is here through the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Whose wish was to meet and get a signature from these gentlemen here. And so we don't have anything actually to have signed, so if you wouldn't mind, I don't think, right? So if you don't mind, let's get these nameplates, if you wouldn't mind signing your little nameplate here. Thanks so much.